agenda today is why certain chemicals are so hazardous to our health, to review current United States laws and their inadequacies, and to discuss what the European Union is doing currently in this arena. Also proposals that could work here in the United States, and what can we as nurses and healthcare professionals do to make a difference? This is just a small snapshot of some of the places where dangerous chemicals lurk. How many people have a can of Raid or Roundup in their shed at home? Sanitizers and hand sanitizers in their purse? Maybe even employ a lawn service? Most of these things utilize pesticides. Pesticides are here on this earth to kill or to stop reproduction of living organisms. So as you can see, they're probably not a good thing to use. And unfortunately, they find their way into our food. Cleaners that you use at your home or the industrial strength that we use in business or healthcare are also very toxic. Healthcare is a huge producer of toxins. Think of the sterilants, disinfectants, waste medications, hazardous medical waste, batteries, mercury, lab solutions. I mean, it's just a whole melting pot of toxic goodies. Some other places that you may not think about right away, but the funeral home, the embalming fluids. Quite toxic. Dry cleaning uses very toxic solvents, as does your manicurist in your nail salon. Disinfectants, acrylics, and again the solvents. So we do know that they're out there, but are we exposed? Are we actually absorbing anything? Unfortunately, toxic chemicals are ubiquitous in the environment and in us. We're exposed daily by many sources. Our bodies are turning into a crock pot full of toxic chemical stew. They're persistent in that they usually don't like to go away, and they're bioaccumulative. They like to join their friends in our bodies. There's over 80,000 chemicals registered here in the United States. The CDC does do a study on it. They provide information on 148 different chemicals, and they measure the amounts in the United States population through biomonitoring. Biomonitoring is simply measuring chemicals or their breakdown in our urine and our blood. Fetal exposure studies. I think this is one of the saddest things of all. We are producing pre-polluted babies. In 2004, the umbilical cord blood of 10 babies was studied. Unfortunately, they found an average of 200 industrial chemicals and pollutants. 180 of the chemicals that were found are known to cause cancer in humans and or animals. Several states are doing biomonitoring projects. One that I'll talk about real briefly is Maine. 2006, 13 state residents volunteered from 18 to 60 years old. Almost 50 toxic pollutants were found, including phthalates, brominated flame retardants, and different types of heavy metals. Well, what is our chemical trespass? When I started in this, everyone was throwing out these initials of basically an alphabet soup. I didn't know what any of them were. So let me just give you a quick idea of where these things that look like you would never encounter them in your daily life. Phthalates. Well, unfortunately, phthalates are plasticizers, and they're found in all kinds of products, from beauty products to vinyl. Dioxins. These are chemicals that are formed as a result of combustion. So they're in our air whether we want them there or not. PCBs, these are polychlorinated biphenyls, which is a mixture of chlorinated compounds. They haven't been manufactured in the United States since 1977, but they're persistent. They lurk. They stay here with us. Brominated flame retardants, heavy metals such as methyl mercury, arsenic, lead, perfluorinated compounds. These are stain and oil repellents. Think of Teflon and how it's everywhere. And last but not least, bisphenol A chemicals. These are used in many plastic products. Think of some of your canned goods that you feed your family that have that white liner inside the can. So we do know we're exposed, and that they're in our bodies, but are they actually harmful? Well, here's a list of some of the health effects linked with or exacerbated by chemical exposure. I believe most of us are nurses here. A recent study published in Lancet showed nurses are twice as likely to develop occupational asthma compared to the general population, which makes a lot of sense when you think of all the sterilants and disinfectants and just everything that nurses do run into in their healthcare facilities that they usually generally work at. Neurotoxicity, through history, we've known heavy metal poisoning can be a problem. Think of the Mad Hatters in the 1800s that worked with mercury to form the brims of the hats and literally did go insane. Minamata disease, back in Japan in the 1950s, a chemical... A factory was dumping chemicals into the lake. The people were fishing and eating the shellfish from there. And unfortunately, they got severe mercury poisoning and lasted through several generations.
Thank you, Lily. Hi, so I want to talk to you about what is the problem with the chemicals and why people are being exposed to chemicals within the United States. And for the United States, how we regulate chemicals that come from the industry is really through a EPA law called the Toxic Substance Control Act. And if you remember anything in this presentation, I want you to understand about TSCA. TSCA is broken. The system is broken. And I'm going to clarify for you particularly why the system is broken. Now, we know about drugs. Pharmaceutical law would, the FDA requires you to test the safety of every drug that goes out there. So we know about the side effects. We know about what its impact on the human system is going to be. The same things are not required for industrial chemicals. This is of importance because with the absence of safety test data, we cannot be sure that the chemicals that are being manufactured and used in high amounts are actually safe. So this law came into effect in 1976. Over 62,000 chemicals were grandfathered in, which means they did not require test safety data. They were in use and continue to be in use. At this point now, we have over 80,000 chemicals. If a chemical is going to be produced, then the manufacturer has to give a 90-day notice to the EPA and tell them if they know of any safety test data that would be relevant to health. However, what is the impetus for doing that type of testing if it will block you from getting to market? If you don't test, you don't have to tell. So there's no screening, and there's also no chemical use tracking, which I think is particularly important. And a lot of chemical companies, a lot of industries are able to hide behind a confidential business information or a trade secret. So they don't even have to really tell people or tell the EPA what is in their product. So because toxins are persistent bioaccumulative and because they drift, so we've heard stories of chemicals being used in the U.S. and being found all the way up in Alaska or in the northern climes of Canada. Well, how does it get there? It's called chemical drift. We hear that a lot about pesticides. And although I'm talking about industrial chemicals, you can think of pesticides within that class as well. It's just controlled under FIFRA. Go back, please. And there are many different ways to construct details of modern chemical policy, but it needs to aim for a toxic-free environment. And this should be based on a focus of the hazard and instead of a risk or a risk analysis. It should be focused on the precautionary principle. It should be focused on substitution principle, so we bring in safer alternatives or green chemistry. And it should be focused critically on the polluter pays principle. If you make money creating a chemical, then you ought to pay for safety test data. And you also should pay for cleanup. And then there is also the right to know principle. Please, next slide. Did I miss one? Okay, also there's an So my alternative vision that I share with many other people working in comprehensive chemical reform is that we want to close that data gap, that safety gap, that technology gap. This comes from Mike Wilson's work at UC Berkeley, where he talked about we don't know enough about chemicals and what they do to health. And because we don't know about that and its uses, we can't construct safety regulation. And also, without the critical information that this chemical is not safe, it won't propel green chemistry and the technology to give us safer products. It requires safety test data, as I mentioned, and that data needs to be available before you get access to market. And then there should be, we should move towards comprehensive reform and away from chemical-specific campaigns. What I'm talking about then is brominated flame retardants, DECA, or the other campaign that's current right now on mercury. We will spend forever trying to prove that these particular chemicals or hazardous substances are not safe, going chemical by chemical. There's 80,000 chemicals out there, people. So we have to think comprehensive reform, not chemical by chemical. And I want you to also understand, we're talking about a paradigm shift. It's hazard. If it presents a hazard, then that's enough. The precautionary principle tells us that's enough. So we need to stop thinking about how much risk is enough. No, if it's a hazard, let's move from there. Next slide, please, and I'll move along. And so we have several different things happening internationally. There is the new European Union. In 2007, they're tackling 10,000 chemicals, and the European Union is the largest chemical industry. So why this is a great thing is that it will impact the U.S. industry market as well. Next slide. And then, so this was called REACH, many of you might have heard, and the intended spirit of REACH is no data, no market. It's about registration, evaluation, authorization, and restriction of chemicals. Companies bear the responsibility for test safety data. They have to report on hazards and the uses of those chemicals, and there is areas in it for safer substitutes. Next slide. The other thing that we have, this developed within the United States, is the Louisville Charter, and these are the six principles that I'm going to go over quickly. It's talking about we must require safer substitute solutions. We need to phase out those BBTs, those persistent bioaccumulative toxins. There's over 3,000 of them. That's where we need to start. We need to require comprehensive safety test data so workers are aware of their exposures. And we need to act with foresight. That's the precautionary principle. We know there's a hazard. We need to act before.
At ANA, the House of Delegates met and passed a resolution in 2006. And really quickly, I'm going to go through that. Reduce use of toxic chemicals at home, work, and the community. Educate legislators regarding chemical hazards and where they exist. Educate nurses about hazardous chemicals in their workplace. Emphasize their right to know. Empower nurses with the knowledge to go and make a difference and to preserve their own health. Integration of the environmental health principles for nurses. Always try to use the least harmful, less toxic. Always look for safe substitutes. Demand adequate information before it hits the market. And we also signed on to the National Campaign for Safe Cosmetics. This is a coalition to phase out use of chemicals linked to cancer and birth defects, as well as other health side effects in personal care products, and replace them with safer alternatives.
So I think that it's great to see leadership like that from American Nurses Association talking about chemical reform. A lot of that is happening also within the medical community, and I think that one thing that we can certainly do as healthcare professionals is try and promote professional associations to adopt a chemical policy reform. And so I'm talking to you out there, the public health professional, the nurse, the physician. What can you do to help promote chemical policy reform? Well, certainly you need to educate yourself and colleagues about chemical hazards. Many people don't understand what their chemical trespass is, and they don't understand that this is something that doesn't just impact that poor person living in that community that sometimes comes into your clinic. It's actually happening in your home, in your workplace. So you need to educate yourself. You need to educate your legislators. Tell them that that you care about this. You need to advocate for environmental justice. Communities who bear the biggest burden are those communities, those minority communities, those communities who live at fence line, and so they have the highest exposure. So we need to advocate for environmental justice. We need to think about, in our disaster preparedness, thinking about how are chemicals going to be spread in the face of a disaster. We saw that in Katrina. And then we need to also get involved in our professional associations. And American Nurses Association has an environmental health task force at many of their constituent member associations, their state associations. If you at all are interested in this, please get involved in your ANA environmental task force. And then nurses are the most trusted voice in health issues. Now, this is an ANA spiel. This comes from the Gallup poll, 2006, 8 years running, nurses are the most trusted healthcare professional on honesty and ethics. That says people are paying attention to what nurses have to say. And I think that that's true also for physicians. They are also trusted. They're in the top six. So physicians, healthcare providers need to talk about this, need to talk to their patients, need to talk to their colleagues. And so you need to advocate for disaster preparedness, first receiver training, and you have to be an institution driver. So what I'm talking about there is at your healthcare facility, you need to work for safer alternatives in the workplace. For more information on that, please go to Healthcare Without Harm's website, who is a co-presenter in this. You need to support labeling, full disclosure, and advocate for change.
It's like I'm in a foot race here. This is our last slide. These are things that you can do in your home and also at your workplace. Look for these products. Obviously, you're going to look for medical products free of DEHP. Things free of mercury. Unfortunately, they're still in some medications and some immunizations, and they're in every fluorescent bulb, even the green-tipped ones. But my point is mercury is in a lot of different places. Look for it. Green cleaners, organic food, beware of brominated flame retardants. Make sure your healthcare facility is following integrated pest management, which uses mechanical and natural means first before trying other means. Fragrance-free, just because something smells like a giant lemon or a giant pine tree does not mean that it's clean. Fragrance-free is a great policy. Medical waste incinerators, don't use them. There is alternative technology out there. Recycle everything, just about. Everything has a secondary market. You might even be able to make some money for your institution. And then, if you bring nothing home from this, reduce hazardous chemicals, replacing them with safe alternatives. And this is everyone's email in case you have more questions or would like more information. Thank you.